Taking on fighters is one thing, but fighting in the shadow of a capital ship, that's enough to get to anyone. Maybe that was the difference between this time and the others. I appreciate the perspective, sir. I also wanted to congratulate you for the way you recovered yourself out there. You were in a very difficult position, and you got yourself out of it rather handily. It was more luck than anything else, sir. If that second blast had caught me square on, I would have been on that interdictor, and Talassia would be under assault. Call it whatever you like, Mr. Horn. You did well.
Wedge shook his head.
Getting those two interceptors after your systems were down was very impressive. As I told Captain Selchew, he did the hard part. I just pulled the trigger. If they'd broken his lock, I would never have hit them.
The younger man frowned.
That brings me to a question, sir.
Yes?
Corrin stopped, and gray mist swirled between the two of them.
Captain Selchew was able to get a torpedo lock on those two interceptors. Why didn't he shoot them himself?
Wedge hesitated, instantly putting Corrin on his guard. The Forbidden is being modified for training purposes to simulate the profile of an assault gunboat. While it has the sensor package for concussion missiles, it doesn't carry any, and couldn't shoot them if it did.
Then why didn't he take them with his lasers? Lambda-class shuttles have lasers.
Wedge's reply came tight and laced with frustration.
The Forbidden does not.
Corrin glanced down at the ground.
Commander, I saw Alliance security escorting Captain Selchew around on Pholor. He's never had fully powered weapons on a Z-95 headhunter. And you're telling me his shuttle had the lasers removed despite our travel through contested sectors of the core? What's going on here?
Wedge took a deep breath, then let it out slowly.
Have you told anyone else about the security escorts?
No, I...
Lieutenant, I want you to understand two things. First, I have the utmost trust and confidence in Captain Selchew. I have no reservations, none, about him, his service, his skills, or his commitment to the Alliance. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Second, the matter to which you allude is a private one, concerning Captain Selchew alone. Because of it, he has agreed to have limitations placed upon himself. Discussion of it is up to him, but both he and I believe bringing the issue up will only serve as a distraction to the squadron.
As if not knowing will not distract me?
Does this mean I can't ask him about it?
Wedge folded his arms across his chest.
Corrin, you are a law enforcement officer, so suspicion comes easily to you, and trust does not. Ask yourself this question. If you could trust him to help shoot those two interceptors, don't you think you can trust him all the way around? He didn't have to save you, but he did, knowing full well he was as dead as you were if the interceptors turned on him.
I see your point, sir.
Corrin nodded slowly.
Doesn't mean I may not ask, unless you order me not to. But I won't tell anyone else about it. And if the captain refuses to answer my questions, I'll have to let it go, I guess. He saved my life. I owe him that much, at least.
Good.
One more thing, sir.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Corrin looked back toward the pulsar skate.
Back there you mentioned that Corellian security never caught the pirates who destroyed the Gus Tretta station and killed your parents. My father got that case, and worked hard on it. He didn't give up. He just didn't have your connections on the other side of the law.
He swallowed hard.
I think if my father had known about Booster Tarek helping you find them, he'd have cut him some slack. And Booster wouldn't have done time in the spice mines.
Wedge reached out and slapped Corrin lightly on the shoulder.
Booster clearly wasn't a Jedi, nor was he Sith spawn. And the time on Kessel got him out of the business. In a more candid moment, Mirax will probably admit the 5 years he spent in the dark was good for her father.
I doubt she and I will share many candid moments, sir.
Really? I think you two would get along quite well together.
Our fathers openly hated each other, sir. Not the best foundation for a lasting friendship.
Corrin shook his head.
Besides, she's your friend.
But just a friend. More like a sister, since she stayed with us when her father was on dangerous runs.
Like a sister to the commanding officer? Now there's incentive to get to know her.
Corrin smiled.
I'll take that under advisement, sir.
Do that, Lieutenant. Having friends never hurts.
Sir! Sir!
Both men looked up as M. Trey materialized out of the Talassian fog.
His dark color on this dim world? I don't envy the commander trying to avoid dealing with the droid here.
Wedge looked over at Corrin, and in an instant Corrin knew they had been thinking the same thing.
M. Trey, good. I'll leave you to discuss the condition of his X-Wing with Lieutenant Horn. Find me after that.
Corrin read an "if you can" in Wedge's smile as the leader of Rogue Squadron turned and walked away.
As you wish, sir.
The droid aborted a salute, then shuffled his feet around to face Corrin.
About your X-Wing, sir, the damage is not that extensive.
What about Whistler?
Ah, your R2 unit.
The droid canted his clamshell head to the side ever so slightly.
Your Whistler will be fine. He shut himself down before the ion blast could do it. This by virtue of the near miss. I must say, sir, that I thought...
Yes, M. Trey, I appreciate that, but he'll be fine?
I should think so, sir, though it was a near thing.
Near thing?
Corrin asked, instantly regretting his invitation to M. Trey to explain.
Well, sir, a power coupling was negatively polarized, precluding an auto restart. Many would consider this a minor problem. The coupling will have to undergo thermo reconditioning. But we have the facilities for that here, since the colonists used to use agrodroids, and this world has some fierce thunderstorms in the rainy season.
Fascinating. Really, M. Trey?
Corrin smiled easily.
You should ask Commander Antilles to let you brief the squadron on the climatology of this world. Use me to escape the droid, will you? Demand it, really.
Demand? Oh my!
Insist, absolutely. 15 or 20 minutes of reasoning with him should convince him of its necessity.
Corrin nodded solemnly.
Now, about my X-Wing. I blew a phi-inverted lateral stabilizer.
That is correct, sir.
M. Trey handed Corrin a datapad.
I have downloaded the requisition forms for the part into this datapad. If you will fill them out, along with an incident report, I'll get Captain Seltzu to review the forms and get Commander Antilles to sign off on them. We'll relay the information back to General Somm. We should have the part in a month or two at the most.
Corrin's jaw dropped.
A month or two?
Provided they have the part, and you don't get pushed back in the priority list.
Priority list?
Yes, sir. You brought your X-Wing with you and have never formally signed it over to the Alliance. To prevent individuals from using the Alliance as a maintenance depot, Regulation 119432, subsection 5, paragraph 3, states non-Alliance craft that are allied with or working under the command of an Alliance leader will be provided with parts and maintenance at the discretion of the commanding officer and or the senior officer in charge of parts and supply for said craft. If said craft are damaged in any actions that were not planned or sanctioned in advance, see Section 12, Paragraph 7 for a list of exceptions, all damage is considered non-Alliance related and to be repaired only after authorized repairs to sanction action-damaged craft have been completed. Now, the exceptions are...
Hold it, M. Trey.
Corrin massaged his temples.
Is this the only way to get a new stabilizer?
Sir, I am conversant in the regulations of over 6 million different military and paramilitary organizations, and there is nothing that...
The pilot rapped a knuckle against the droid's black breastplate, and that stopped the litany.
M. Trey, There have to be more Phi-inverted lateral stabilizers in existence than we have in all the Alliance ships and stores. Z-95 headhunters and INCOM T-47 airspeeders both use the part. There's probably a wrecked T-47 out here somewhere, in fact.
There might be, sir.
The droid rotated his head around in a circle to scan the whole area.
I'll prepare the forms requesting a general survey of the local sector.
Dropping the data pad, Corin reached out and grabbed the droid's head in both hands. He pulled M'Tray's facial opening toward him.
You're missing my point, M'Tray. Forms and requests will take time. Without that part, I can't fly. If I can't fly, I'll be stuck in this fog and on the ground. And that will make life miserable for me. And I don't want that. There are parts to be had.
And regulations to be observed.
Regulations be damned!
The droid pulled back a step, and the condensation on his head let him slip away.
Sir, of all the members of Rogue Squadron, I would have thought you would appreciate adherence to regulations.
Corin sighed. Regulations have their place, but not when they hurt.
Can't you just scrounge the part or something?
The droid froze in position, the flashing light in his eyes being the only indication he was still working. The pilot luxuriated in the cessation of the droid's chatter, but it went on far longer than he'd heard before in the droid's presence. The eye flashes became asynchronous, and this worried Corin a bit. M'Tray? The droid's eyes went dark for a moment. Then his limbs and head jerked as if he had been struck by lightning.
M'Tray?
The eyes lit up again, and Corin would have sworn they were a bit brighter.
Scrounging protocol engaged, sir.
The droid bent down and smoothly retrieved the data pad. He glanced at the data pad, then shook his head.
I'll shoot a requisition up through channels. But I think I can find you something sooner than anything we get from command. You're a pilot, and my job is to keep you flying. Consider it done.
Even the voice sounded different to Corin.
M'Tray, are you all right? Is the moisture getting to you?
I'm fine, sir. The moisture is no problem.
One eye light flashed on and off.
Touch of a virus, maybe? But nothing to worry about.
Did that droid just wink at me? Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
The droid saluted smartly.
If you have nothing further, sir, I'll get on this right away. And I'll have your gear sent around to your billet, sir.
Thank you, M'Tray.
Corin returned the salute.
Dismissed.
The droid turned sharply on his heel and walked away. Corin stared after him, then shivered.
Oral did not think it was so cold here.
Corin spun and saw the gray-green colored Gand standing behind him.
Another who blends in with this fog. Not cold, Oral. Just fatigue. It's been a long day, full of surprises.
Quark wanted to apologize for abandoning you.
The Gand Finsman clutched his hands together penitently.
Quark was too busy dodging interceptors on Quark's tail to see you were not there.
You followed orders, just as I would have.
Quark would give you a sign of Quark's sorrow.
Corin threw an arm around the Gand's exoskeletal shoulders.
I'll tell you what. Guide me back to my billet and let me get a solid 8 hours of sleep, and we'll call it even. Will that assuage your Gand guilt?
Laurel finds this acceptable.
Good.
Corin swept his left hand through the fog.
Lead on, Oral. And this time, I promise, I'll follow right behind you.
XV. the officious, bulbous officer stared laser bolts at Kirtan Lore.
I can see your orders are all properly drawn, but I have never appreciated intelligence operatives meddling in fleet affairs.
I appreciate your concern, Admiral Devlia, as well as your willingness to return from retirement to Imperial service. But Imperial security must take precedence at this time, which I believe you would agree is most critical.
The little man brushed his gray mustache with a finger, and his expression eased.
Just so we understand each other?
Of course.
Kirtan cared little for the Admiral's concerns, but the Interdictor cruiser Black Asp was part of Devlia's command. Its report of being ambushed by a squadron it identified as Rogue Squadron had brought Kirtan all the way from Coruscant to Vladette in the Rechuk system to speak with the Black Asp's captain, Ula Ailor. He suspected a great chunk of Devlia's discomfort with his visit came because it forced the Admiral to deal with Ailor, one of the women who had risen to command to fill the gaps left in the Imperial Navy after the Endor debacle. The intelligence agent found himself anxious to meet Captain Ailor. He had read her file, as well as that of Admiral Devlia and most of the senior command staff during his journey out from Coruscant. The files were a welcome departure from tracking the various rumors about Rogue Squadron, but her record especially intrigued him. In studying it, he caught hints of how forceful she had to have been to have risen in the Imperial Navy as far as she got before the Emperor's death. Devlia stood and smoothed his gray jacket over his round belly.
And I'll tell you here and now that I'll stop any questions I think are off the mark.
I understand that, sir.
Dream all you want, Admiral.
Devlia led Kirtan from his spacious office down a narrow hallway in the mansion that housed the command staff. The Admiral preceded him into a small study that had been converted into a conference room through the addition of a big table that dominated the room. Boxes full of data cards still lined the built-in shelves, and Kirtan judged it a larger library than he would have expected to find on a planet like Vladette. Devlia secured himself in the chair at the head of the table, then waved a hand toward the woman standing at the far end.
Captain Ailor, this is Agent Kirtan Lore. He wants to ask you some questions about the ambush.
Yes, sir.
The brown-haired woman looked at Kirtan without a trace of the hunted look most people acquired when told intelligence wanted to question them.
I'll help if I am able, Agent Lore.
Her voice had an edge to it that backed up the challenge in her dark eyes. Kirtan assumed her lack of fear came after years of being on the Navy's NHM track, non-human. The Empire's bias against aliens and women reached an unprecedented level of refinement in the Imperial Navy. Ailor had been sent to serve under Colonel Thrawn, and had a host of other alien superior officers before she had been given a ship of her own. She would have been stuck on that Carrick-class cruiser had not the defeat at Endor made the need for competent officers so great that the command staff survivors re-evaluated personnel and awarded commands according to some semblance of merit.
I'm sure you will, Captain. I would like any reports you have filed about this action, as well as any holographic records of it, along with any communication intercepts.
He walked around to the left side of the table, then turned back toward Devlia.
With the Admiral's permission, of course.
The old man nodded.
Very well. If you don't mind, please tell me what happened.
May I sit?
By all means.
Kirtan smiled, but remained standing.
Make yourself comfortable.
Captain Ailor sat and turned her chair so she gave Devlia her profile.
We had information that a smuggler running supplies to the rebels was expected in the Chorak system at a particular time and would be departing after picking up some supplies there. I sent a shuttle in to monitor the smuggler's situation while I put the Black Asp on the fringe of the system. When the pulsar skate started to head out of the system, I jumped the Black Asp in and brought my G7X gravjectors up.
Kirtan frowned. Intra-system jumping is a rather unusual tactic, isn't it? Ayalor shook her head.
I've seen it used with great success out in the unknown sector. It worked at Chorax, too, because the skate had no idea where we came from. It took them nearly 6 seconds to begin evasive maneuvers. I took the liberty of closing to use our ion cannons on the skate during that time. Then a dozen X-Wings came into the system.
I deployed my interceptor squadron, but none of the pilots are Academy material. They would have been eaten up, so I brought the Black Asp in and managed to disable one X-Wing. By then, however, the remainder of them screened the skate and hit my forward shield with a volley of proton torpedoes. The shield came down, and I lost 2 laser batteries. I had to choose between reinforcing my shields or keeping the gravjectors operational. I made the former choice, recovered 5 interceptors, and went to light speed.
Devlia leaned forward.
They were waiting for the Black Asp. They came out of hyperspace right on top of her.
Kirtan stroked his chin. I don't see that one thing establishes the other. I see no evidence of an ambush.
Ayalor's head came up.
That's what I've been telling the Admiral.
You're both blind!
I think, sir, with all due respect, you are making unwarranted assumptions.
Kirtan began to pace around the edge of the table, passing behind the Admiral and back again.
Interdictor cruisers are designed to pull ships out of hyperspace. Of course, only where the route is known in advance can they be positioned in such a way that doing that is possible. In this case, since the Black Asp was in the Chorax system specifically to prevent a ship from entering hyperspace, you have chosen to discard one of its primary functions.
Preposterous!
Which is precisely the kind of mistake I would have made previously.
Kirtan allowed himself a slight smile.
Check your thinking. If you chose to ambush an interdictor cruiser, would you do so with a single squadron of X-Wings?
Devlia's face reddened.
Perhaps I would not, but I have training most Rebel officers do not.
Granted, sir. Yet the Rebels are not without wise leadership.
Kirtan left allusions to Yavin and Endor unvoiced, but he saw by Devlia's expression the man had caught them anyway.
I might ask why the Rebels would waste their time attacking an interdictor cruiser at all. No disrespect intended to you, Captain Ayalor, or your ship. But the action of interdictors is hardly crippling to the Rebellion. Our main battle fleets are garrisoning key worlds, like Corellia and Kuat. So even predation on interdictors is unlikely to draw them out.
Ayalor did not smile, but her nod was not as stiff as before.
My assumption was that we had suffered the misfortune of pulling a convoy out of hyperspace, but the Admiral found such coincidence unlikely.
Kirtan smiled.
The Admiral, despite this misjudgment, is formidable enough that I should think the Rebels utter fools to operate in his command sector.
Devlia had opened his mouth to protest the first half of Kirtan's statement. The second half, which Kirtan had added as a sop to the man's vanity, killed the Admiral's comment and clicked his jaw shut. The intelligence agent again focused on Captain Ayalor.
How did you identify them as Rogue Squadron?
Communication intercepts used Rogue call signs. Visual data is not very good, but there is a unique unit crest painted on the S-foils. Preliminary searches correlated with a crest said to be that of Rogue Squadron. Also, the Pulsar Skate is a ship with Corellian connections, just like Wedge Antilles. And the pilots were hot. They took off 7 of my interceptors, with the last 2 falling to an X-Wing that was dead.
Devlia leaned back.
Interesting. but circumstantial, as I'm sure Agent Lore will agree.
Circumstantial, yes, but persuasive.
Everything she had said about the squadron that attacked the Black Asp did seem to point to Rogue Squadron. Kirtan doubted any other unit in the Rebellion would sport Rogue call signs, and the crest data would have to be checked. Still and all, it was not conclusive.
It is, however, a start. Captain, did your shuttle stay in system and monitor the squadron for outbound vector and speed?
Iolor scowled.
No. And Lieutenant Potin has been reprimanded for fleeing when not threatened. I do have entry vector and velocity data, and it is triangulated with the data from the shuttle.
That's something, then.
I will make certain you have it in time for your return to Imperial Center, Agent Lore.
Devlia stood.
Assuming you want nothing else here?
I do want to speak to the pilots who flew against the X-Wings, as well as review any data recorded from the interceptors that were destroyed.
I'll see the interviews are arranged right away.
Take your time, Admiral. The next 2 or 3 days will be soon enough.
The old man's expression soured.
Staying that long, are you?
Longer, I suspect.
Kirtan smiled broadly for the Admiral.
If Rogue Squadron is operating in this area, and I believe it is, I'll leave only after we've found them and destroyed them. And not a moment sooner.
16. In only 2 weeks, while the official request for a new phi-inverted lateral stabilizer languished in red tape limbo, M-Trey found a pair of phi-inverted lateral stabilizers that the Pulsar Skate dropped off on its second run to Talassia. The Rogue's Verpine tech used the new parts to replace the older, damaged parts. In synchronizing them, Zrai managed to smooth things out, so Corrin noticed a 5% increase in power at full throttle, with a 3% reduction in fuel consumption. Corrin throttled back slightly, matching his speed to that of Oral.
Three flight to lead. We're all in formation, sir.
I copy, Nine. Stand by.
As ordered, lead.
Corrin smiled broadly in spite of himself. Back when he was with Corsec, he had hated escort duty. But after 2 weeks on the ground, he would have volunteered to go after Death Stars, even if they were strung around a system like pearls on a necklace. Even during his time on the run from Corellia, he'd managed to fly at least once a week, even though that was well outside the profile of the identity Gil Bastra had created for him. He turned and looked back at Whistler.
Has M-Trey come up with any information based on his analysis of the ID Gil made up for me?
A mournful hoot came in reply as the word no appeared on his display.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of never seeing Gil again either.
He glanced at his sensor monitor.
12, trim it up a bit there. You're slipping behind. Trouble?
No difficulty. Compliance.
Good. Keep close. This mission should be easy enough that a nerf herder could do it. But the other side will be shooting back, so we have to be careful.
Despite the light tone in his voice, he knew things could get nasty. Alliance operatives had been conducting surveys of core worlds to assess the political climate and determine the strength of Imperial forces protecting them. On one run back toward their operations base, known to the pilots only as Black Kurz Base, with no location specified for security reasons, they ran into the strike cruiser Havoc. The rebels went to ground on a small jungle planet in the Hensara system. They sank their ship, a modified Imperial customs frigate, in a deep lake, and lacked the equipment needed to repair damage that would allow them to move it again. The Havoc grounded an Imperial walker and 2 scouts, along with 2 platoons of stormtroopers. While their reported progress in searching out the rebels had been slow, they started relatively close to the lake, so the ship's discovery was a matter of time. The Alliance had reconciled itself to the loss of the ship and had intended a covert extraction of the operatives. then, the Havoc left the system, providing a window for repair and escape of the frigate Battle of Yavin. Wedge sent the squadron the coordinates for the trip to the Hansara system. To cover the location of their base, the journey would be undertaken in three parts. The first jump, a short one, would take them to their first transit point, an uninhabited star system not far from the Marobe system. From there, they would jump back out rimward to the second transit system and back in to the Hansara system. While the multiple jumps and changes of direction would add hours to the flight time, obscuring their point of origin was vital. The Alliance had learned that spreading out its forces meant it was all but impossible for the Empire to land a death blow to the Rebellion. But for the efforts of a courageous few on Hoth, the Rebellion's headquarters would have been destroyed, and the Rebellion along with it. Without taking precautions, they would pinpoint the location of their base and invite retaliation. They made the first jump on Wedge's mark and came out in the fringes of the transit system all in one piece. The X-Wings maneuvered around to the exit vector quickly, then had to mark time as the Skate and the Corellian corvette Iridane came about. Corrin nudged his throttle back a notch, shortening the gap between him and the Gand. The larger ships reported they were ready, so the whole convoy shot into hyperspace and came out in the second transit system intact. The course adjustment there was not as radical as the one from the first system, so they headed out quickly and arrived in the Hansara system, just outside the gravitational tug of the third planet. Corrin heard Tycho's voice come through the comm.
Rogue Leader, Captain Afion reports a clean scan of the system. You're clear for your run.
Copy, Control. Three flight. You fly Cap. Two and one, on me.
Corrin let a low snarl resound in his throat. Flying Combat Aerospace Patrol meant his flight would remain at the edge of Hansara 3's atmosphere against the possible incursion of any Imperial forces. The other eight fighters in the squadron were going to escort the Skate down and strafe the Imperial mudbugs and the Durasteel dogs they had hunting Dirk Harkness and his compatriots on the planet. Strafing runs against ground troops, even stormtroopers, wasn't much in the action department, but it was better than skipping across atmosphere, shooting at nothing. He shrugged. Maybe slagging an AT-AT will sweeten Jace's disposition. Whistler gave a stuttered chirp that sounded as close as the droid could manage to a laugh. Corrin matched it with some laughter of his own. Jace clearly figures that because his name rhymes with Ace, he should be one. He can't understand why TIE pilots don't just line up for him to vape them all in one pass. Tycho's urgent comm call cut off Whistler's trilled comment.
Control to all rogues. We have a strike cruiser that just jumped in system. Profile matches Havoc, but two fighter bays have been added. TIEs are launching.
Three flight, lock S-foils in attack position.
Corrin glanced at his sensor display.
Come to a heading of 272 degrees.
Control here. I have 36, repeat, 36, TIEs launched. Six interceptors, six bombers, and 24, repeat, 24 starfighters. Iridane, beginning evasive maneuvers. Wait. Confirm. Bombers are heading to ground.
We copy, Control.
Wedge's voice came through strong, despite being nibbled upon by static.
Rogues 3 and 4, the bombers are yours. The rest are ours. Keep them off Iridane.
As ordered, Rogue Leader.
Corrin shoved his throttle full forward.
Go all out, 3 Flight. Into the middle. Shoot at anything that isn't an X-Wing. Call if you need help.
Under normal circumstances, Corrin knew that flying into the teeth of an enemy formation would have been suicidal. But odds of 30-4 weren't all that conducive to long-term survival anyway. Since running wasn't an option, doing what the enemy didn't expect would buy him a second or two of surprise, and that would keep him alive just that much longer. Hauling back on his stick and canting it ever so slightly to the side, he brought the X-Wing up into a lopsided corkscrew maneuver. While the jerky motion of the ship's nose meant he didn't have a flame's chance on Hoth of hitting anything, he was that much harder to hit himself. He pumped more power into his shields, then shot through a flurry of laser bolts before he penetrated the Imperial formation. He hauled back on his stick, killing the weaving flight and arrowing his ship up into a flight of TIEs. He lined one starfighter up in his sights and let it have a quad blast of lasers. As the eyeball exploded, he cut the stick hard to starboard, then rolled out into a level line that continued his original course, with a half-kilometer cut to the right thrown in. As the TIE formation collapsed in after him, he cruised out the other side of it. Inverting his X-Wing, he pulled the fighter into a loop that brought him around in the TIE's wake, though slightly below their formation. Keeping the nose up, he headed back in again. He picked up on a TIE interceptor that had broken right while its wingmate had broken left. Oral continued on the tail of the latter squint. The other interceptor tightened its turn into a teardrop loop designed to bring it onto the Gans aft. Corrin's quad lasers shredded the interceptor's starboard wing and blew apart one of the twin ion engines. The other, operating at full power, sent the squint spinning away. Corrin winced in sympathy with the pilot, then drove into the middle of the TIE formation. The X-Wings, plunging and wheeling through the middle of the TIEs, had an unanticipated advantage in that they had a very high target-to-comrade ratio to shoot at. Moreover, because the X-Wings had shields, even a shot taken in haste at another rogue would not likely prove fatal. The same could not be said of the TIEs. One burst from their lasers could cripple or kill a fellow pilot. Corrin snapped a shot off at one starfighter and watched it disintegrate. A warning warble from Whistler, and he mashed his right foot down on the etheric rudder pedal. The X-Wing's stern slewed around to the left, swinging him out of an interceptor's line of fire while pointing his nose right at the ship as it sailed past him. He punched the X-Wing over 90 degrees, hauled back on the stick, then completed the inversion and dove down onto the interceptor's tail. He sent kilojoules of scarlet energy into the ball cockpit and watched the craft explode.
Nine, break left!
Without thinking, Corrin slammed the stick hard to port and caught the green highlights of laser bolts shooting through where he had just been. More red laser fire chased back along those same lines, and something exploded out there. Thanks, Commander.
No problem, Nine.
Corrin eased his stick forward and dove down to stay clear of the mass of starfighters. With the arrival of the rest of the squadron, he knew there was no way he could track all the ships and sort friend from foe. Even as he came back up, he saw less laser fire permeating the cloud of fighters than there had been when the forces were less evenly matched. So much twisting and turning going on in there. No one can find a target and stick with it long enough to dust it. Pulling up to continue his loop around the fringe of the battle, he saw one X-Wing break free with a starfighter on its tail. His sensors told him Gavin was at the stick of the Alliance ship. Measuring Gavin's line, Corrin rolled his craft and looped down at a tangent to it. Rogue Five, break hard right! Gavin's fighter rolled up on its starboard S-foil crisply and pulled away at an angle that cast doubt on the existence of inertia. The starfighter following him tried to imitate his maneuver, but neither the pilot nor craft were up to it. As the TIE rolled, Corrin swooped and fired. His quad lasers burst the spherical pod like a bubble, sending the hexagonal wings slicing off through space. Before he could even smile, his X-Wing jolted forward. His instruments indicated heavy damage to his aft shield. Whistler, give me a lock on that TIE! Corrin inverted and dove, then pulled back on the stick to power up through a teardrop and onto the TIE's tail. Instead of being where he expected it, the TIE, an interceptor, showed up off his port S-foil, going away at a right angle to his course. Corrin stood on his left rudder, then did a snap roll that gave him a view of the planet above his head, and the interceptor racing away from him. Just as he feared, it was going to run far enough for Tycho or someone else on the Iridane to blast it. The interceptor pulled its own loop planetward and started back at him. Head to head, he knows what he's doing. As Wedge and Tycho had pointed out countless times in training, the majority of kills took place in head-to-head engagements.
But so do I.
Watch our tail, Whistler!
Corrin kicked his shields full forward and drove in straight at the interceptor. The rangefinder on the targeting monitor scrolled numbers off with blurred speed. His crosshairs went green, and he fired, but couldn't see how much damage he'd done because of the light show produced by the interceptor's lasers eating away at his shields. Corrin stabbed the right rudder pedal with his foot, swinging the ship around a full 180 degrees. Punching his throttle to full, he killed his momentum, then dropped the engines to zero thrust. With his thumb, he popped his weapons control over to proton torpedoes and got a solid tone when he trapped the fleeing interceptor in the targeting box. His finger tightened once on the trigger, and a single torpedo shot away on a jet of blue flame. The torpedo caught up with the interceptor quickly enough, but the TIE pilot, confirming his possession of the skill Corrin had willingly granted him before, juked his interceptor out of its path at the last second. Unfortunately for him, his maneuvering and run at Corrin had taken him to the outer edge of Hansara's atmosphere. While not particularly dense, impact with it at the speed the interceptor was traveling proved devastating. The starboard wing shattered, and the interceptor ricocheted away in a wobbly somersault.
Control, this is Skate. We're on our way back up. We have company that wants to go home.
Good job, Skate. Rogue Leader, mission accomplished. I heard that, Control. Rogues, regroup for egress.
Corrin smiled as he heard Gavin's voice over the comm.
Leader, there are two getting away!
Let them go, Five. Leaders, check your flights.
Whistler, give me feeds on my people!
A tracking chart replaced the targeting data on Corrin's screen.
9, 10, 11, and 12.
Three flight is all here!
Control to Rogue Leader. I have a dozen X-Wings in system, two interceptors on recovery vectors, and two deployed shuttles on pilot recovery missions.
Corrin clapped his hands. We didn't lose anyone?
Are you complaining, Nine?
No, sir, Commander. Not at all. It's just...
Yes, Nine?
This is Rogue Squadron. I thought most of the pilots didn't survive Rogue missions.
That was when there was still an Emperor, Nine.
The grim tone in Wedge's voice gave way to one somewhat lighter.
I guess that's the difference. Let's head home, Rogues. This is one victory we can celebrate without having to toast dead comrades. And I, for one, like the change.
Wedge sat with his back against the thick wall of the grand room in what had once been Talassia's planetary governor's palace. The title sounded much more important than the building and room it described. Built with heavy beams made of the dark native wood and plaster slathered over wooden slats, it reminded him of the sorts of reconstructions he'd seen in museums on Corellia.
This is about as primitive as it gets.
The incongruity struck him as he watched his pilots sitting around a couple of central tables, using their hands to describe the twists and turns they went through in what they had taken to calling the Rout of Hansara. They could have downloaded their sensor packets and played them out on the widescreen holoviewer in the corner, but that device remained black. By telling the stories themselves, they shared not only what they did, which the sensor data would have shown in exacting detail, but how they felt about it.
And in doing that, they'll know they're all the same.
Wedge tipped his chair back against the wall. He glanced at two Alderaanians who shared his table with him.
They did a good job out there today.
Tycho smiled broadly. They did better than good. They were spectacular. We recorded 34 kills out of a possible 36 with no losses. If I hadn't been there, I'd think it was propaganda.
Afion looked up from a barely touched tankard of the local Lum equivalent.
You know as well as I do, gentlemen, they were awfully lucky. They may be the hottest pilots going, but vaping ties won't Coruscant take. That's going to take an operation that will need more than snubby jocks to make it go.
Wedge lowered his lungmuck.
Captain, I've been in this rebellion for as long as you have. I remember the fighting at Endor, and I know the Iridain fought hard.
I appreciate that, Commander Antilles. But it was you who got paraded around the New Republic as the hero who saved the rebellion.
Tycho's blue eyes narrowed.
He did blow the Death Star, you realize, and survive the previous Death Star run.
I know. I know you were there, too.
Afion sat back and frowned.
Look, I'm not saying you don't deserve your recognition. And I'm not saying your people don't deserve their little party here. Strapping yourself into a fighter isn't the easiest thing to do. And more fighter pilots die than do the folks I have crewing with me. But our contribution to this rebellion is just as important as yours is.
Wedge nodded slowly.
I know that, Captain. And if the Iridane hadn't been there today to make the Havoc think twice about closing with us, we would have been blind jumping out of the system.
Afion shook his head.
Don't take me for a stormy, Antilles. I don't believe everything I'm told. You'd have gone after the Havoc itself. What's a strike cruiser to a crew that turned two Death Stars into black holes?
The Corellian brought his chair down onto all four legs. The New Republic might promote me and this squadron as immortal and immune to danger, but I know better than that. Two of us, just two, survived Yavin. A half dozen survived Hoth, and just four of us lived through Endor. As far as I'm concerned, the Death Stars lived up to their names. Well, now, this squadron has to live up to its name. The New Republic is using us as a symbol, because it's easier to blind people to the blood cost of war when you get to celebrate the heroic efforts of a half dozen people. Luke Skywalker is easy to admire and want to follow. Han Solo is a man who rose from nothing to become a hero and consort with royalty. Me? I'm the quintessential soldier who does his job very well. But what is that job? Two things. Neutralizing Imperials and, the part I take most seriously, keeping my people alive.
Wedge raked fingers back through his brown hair.
It doesn't matter if we were good or lucky out there today, and I'd rather the former than trust in the latter. What does matter is that we all survived, and that's as close to a miracle as I ever expect to see in my lifetime. The key thing to remember is that I can't trust in our luck or skill. I can't allow myself to believe we were that much better than the opposition, and I can't let my people believe it. If they do, they'll die taking chances they should never take.
Afion sucked on his teeth for a second.
You're right. I guess I just remember the Clone Wars and how the hero labels were handed out. You'd think a dozen Jedi and two dozen snubby jocks won the whole thing. Even all the years I spent pulling for peace, same as most of the rest of the folks on Alderaan, never dulled that feeling of injustice I had concerning credit for the war. Weird, huh? Wanting peace enough to agree to disarmament of my home planet, yet still burning about credit for my part in a war?
The other Alderaanian at the table shook his head.
One of the problems we all have is that we try to think of ourselves in general terms, and that smooths over some of the inconsistencies that make us who we are. We see all Imperials as rancors, and they see all of us as nerfs. The very fact that we see them as a united front is ridiculous, just the same as we're not all united, as this discussion proves.
Afion smiled.
I've not heard that kind of philosophy since, our world.
Tycho nodded solemnly and squeezed Afion's shoulder with his right hand.
I do know.
He smiled and looked over at the knot of pilots in the center of the room.
I'm afraid this group does not inspire that much philosophy. I appreciate being able to share some with another Alderaanian.
Wedge glanced at his pilots, then tipped his chair back up against the wall, as the Twi'lek stood. Nuara Venn flipped one of his brain tails around and over his shoulder, as if it were a scarf, then stumbled slightly. Wedge wasn't sure if it was the cavalier way he tossed his brain tails around, or the drink that made the pilot stumble. The lum brewed up by the ground crew had the potency of Corellian brandy, and the piquant bouquet, according to Gavin, of a Tatooine dewback in heat. Nuara remained almost completely upright as he wove his way through tables to where Wedge sat.
Forgive me, noble leaders, but we require your esteemed personages to act as a tribunal to adjudicate a question.
The Twi'lek pressed a hand to his own chest.
Owing to my legal background, I've been appointed a neutral advocate to present the cases to you.
Wedge couldn't keep a smile from his face. Please proceed, Counselor.
Thank you, sir.
Nuara turned back toward the other pilots.
First, we have the case of the worst pilot in the unit. May I present Gavin Darklighter, who won this award by virtue of the fact of not getting anything out there today.
Easier to read than the scowl on Gavin's face was the open relief on the faces of Lujane Forge and Peshk Vrsik. Wedge knew the award had to sting Gavin badly, but he was young. The rest of the squadron had been willing to cut him a lot of slack because of his youth, but that latitude would last only so long. In Wedge's opinion, Gavin wasn't the worst pilot, by far. But his lack of kills allowed his squadron mates to rib him a little. Nuara gestured at Gavin.
The accused will stand.
Gavin remained seated. Bror Jace grabbed him by the shoulder of his flight suit and hauled him up out of his seat.
Here he is, the worst we have. Just like the TIE pilots, he got zero kills.
The edge in Jace's voice provoked a snarl from Gavin's wingmate, Sheel. Color flooded Gavin's face, and muscles bunched at his jaw as he ground his teeth. Jace laughed and tugged on Gavin's shoulder, like a puppeteer manipulating a marionette. The Twi'lek, seemingly oblivious to Gavin's discomfort, smiled at the tribunal.
We have determined there should be a punishment of some sort to encourage an improvement in performance.
Wedge turned his head to face the other two members of the tribunal.
Ideas, gentlemen?
Tycho held a finger up.
Strikes me that apprenticing Gavin to the best pilot, having him run errands and the like for him, might provide the perfect situation for Gavin to learn how to be better.
I like that, Tycho. Corrin won't be too hard on him, and the added responsibility will give Corrin something to think about other than your situation.
Wedge nodded.
I think that is a good idea. Captain Afyon?
Sure. I know I'd love to have an aide to draft the performance reports for the Iridane.
Captain Afyon's suggestion brought a groan from the squadron. So Wedge cataloged the threat of report preparation for future disciplinary use.
I believe, Counselor, you have your judgment rendered.
The Twi'lek bowed and straightened up slowly, then turned back to his compatriots.
Gavin Darklighter, you are sentenced to serve as aide to the best pilot in the squadron, until such time as you are no longer judged the worst pilot.
Bror smiled broadly and gave Gavin's flight suit one last tug.
Good. You can start your service by getting me more lum.
Wedge frowned.
How is it that you, Mr. Jace, are considered the best pilot? You only had 5, and Mr. Horn had 6. If we average them over the last 2 engagements, then Mr. Horn has 4.5, with you, Mr. Quirk, and me each at 2.5. You fare no better when we total them.
Nuara smiled, flashing pointy peg teeth.
You have hit upon the crux of the matter, sir. Mr. Jace argues that percentages tell the true story. He killed 5 of the 6 bombers he faced, meaning he downed 85% of the TIEs he engaged.
Gavin sat down and snarled. And they were big, lumbering bombers. No one could have missed them.
The Twi'lek clucked at Gavin, then continued his explanation.
Mr. Horn, on the other hand, shot only 6 of 30, giving him a kill percentage of 20%.
Wedge shook his head. This is ridiculous. Percentages have no place in this. If you don't mind, sir.
Corrin stood up and glared over at Broar.
I'm willing to let things be figured by percentages.
Go ahead, Mr. Horn.
Corrin folded his arms across his chest.
You want a real contest, Jace?
The Thypheran raised his head and glared down at the shorter man.
It's an easy offer to be made by the man in the lead.
I'm willing to make it even. And I'll even concede this round to you, declaring you the best pilot until our next mission.
Corrin opened his arms and rested his right hand on Gavin's shoulder.
What I'm willing to do is average Gavin's kills in with mine. The one he got at Chorax adds to my 9. Then we split that in half. That puts us even, at an average of 5 kills. You and I are both aces, and now so is he.
Don't do this, Corrin.
The small man winked down at Gavin.
I trust you, kid. You'll do fine.
We start even? The Thypheran asked.
Corrin nodded.
We go straight kills from here on out. Or average them. Your choice.
Broar raised a blonde eyebrow.
You are still willing to average the kid's kills in with yours?
The Corellian nodded again and patted Gavin's shoulder.
You willing to take the challenge?
Wedge watched conflicting emotions ripple over Broar Jace's face. He clearly wanted to go one-on-one with Corrin, to prove he was better, free and clear. Yet the rules Corrin was offering him played in his favor. Any kill Corrin got would only count half. Unless Corrin excelled, killing 2 for Broar's 1, or Gavin started on a tear, Broar would win easily. The difference between their skill levels was not significant enough to give Corrin a real chance of winning. Broar's blue eyes thinned to arctic slits.
We'll average things just to keep Gavin in the game. But you and I can go head to head whenever I choose.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
And you and I, because we did have the most kills at Hansara, will share the best pilot crown until our next outing.
Corrin smiled.
Done.
Wedge nodded once to Corrin, then looked up at the Twi'lek.
So, by this settlement, Broar and Corrin are co-best pilots, and Gavin has 5 kills, correct, Counselor?
The Twi'lek nodded.
If you so agree, members of the Tribunal.
The 3 judges agreed, and Nawara smiled.
It is done, then!
And the worst pilot is still apprenticed to the best pilot?
Nawara nodded.
The worst pilot is still bound by that agreement.
Good.
Wedge stood and slapped the Twi'lek on the back.
Then since Gavin has 5 kills to his credit, that makes you, with only 1 kill, the worst pilot.
Nawara's pasty complexion became ghost-like.
No appeal?
Wedge smiled.
To you, there probably is not. But the idea of a lawyer getting the sentence instead of his client has some appeal to me.
The Twi'lek frowned and caressed one of his brain tails.
Perhaps it is true that a lawyer who has himself as a client is a fool.
Which is why you're a pilot now, Mr. Venn.
Wedge laughed lightly.
Consider your sentence suspended, at least for the duration of this celebration. Today we proved how good we can be. Tomorrow we go back to training to make sure we know how we did what we did, so we can continue doing it in the future.
Kirtan Lor scratched at the reddish raw patch of flesh behind his right ear. Raychuck roseola was a virus, he was told, that got to everyone who came to the world. Scratching it didn't appear to make it worse, and nothing but time made it better. It annoyed him because he found it distracting. And at this late stage in his calculations, distraction was the last thing he needed. He pored over the data from Hansara again, correlating figures and sensor tracks with known performance parameters for X-Wings. All the ships in the squadron appeared to be operating within 2 standard deviations of the mean of Rebel specifications. This told him that the ships were in good repair, which meant the Rebels were expending considerable resources on that squadron to keep the ships working. That little factoid, combined with the spectacular kill ratio, led him to believe Rogue Squadron had been at Hansara. Visuals were of generally poor quality, but the crests and fighters appeared to match those images recorded by the Black Asp, confirming the squadron's presence at Chorax as well. He had no objective confirmation about the squadron being Rogue Squadron, but one communications intercept had included the name Wedge, and Kirtan thought he heard some faint trace of Corran Horn's voice in other messages. The end-for-end swapping maneuver that led to the damaging of one interceptor had been Vintage Horn, providing Lor all the evidence he needed to label the X-Wings as Rogue Squadron. Admiral Devlia had not been convinced, but he had agreed to send units out to find the squadron's base, if Kirtan could isolate it. Admiral Devlia had made the offer in a voice that suggested providing such information would be impossible. It should have been impossible, and for most people it would have been. However, Kirtan Lor remembered a wealth of things that might be trivia to others, but proved to be useful to the search for the Rogue's base. He had to make a few assumptions about them and the force they arrived with, but his calculations could be run with a number of variables factored in. Then all that data could be correlated with known system locations and Rebel preferences for bases. Because several of the X-Wings entered the atmosphere of Hansara III, they left significant traces of ionized fuel in the atmosphere. Spectral analysis of those trails provided an amount of thrust that gave Kirtan an indication of the quantity of fuel used per second of operation with sublight engines. This proved consistent with the known specifications of the X-Wing. Since the performance of sublight engines had not been modified, he assumed the hyperspace engines were similarly standard. The forces on the ground on Hansara provided some basic entry vector and velocity data for the Rebel force. Backplotting was not terribly difficult, and suggested to Kirtan that the force had begun their last jump from the Derek system. Using the fuel consumption figures for an X-Wing's hyperspace engine, he was able to subtract from the weight of the ship the appropriate amount of fuel. Thrust output, vector, and velocity data provided him with changing weights for the X-Wings as they burned up fuel in their flight. The ending weight and fuel consumption seemed consistent for known performance profiles. Precluding refueling stops along the way, the amount of fuel he calculated for them determined the range to their base. He had to assume, of course, that they had started with a full load of fuel, and the same had to be assumed for the Pulsar Skate and Iridane, as well as the Lambda-class shuttle at Chorax. Working out the fuel consumption and range limits for those ships had shown them to be far more fit for distance travel than the X-Wings, as would be expected of larger ships. But few ships liked to travel beyond range of their escorts. Even limiting the trip to the range of the X-Wings gave each flight the capability of traveling a considerable distance. He further reduced the range by assuming the Rebels would keep sufficient fuel in the X-Wings for a dogfight or rearguard action to allow other ships to escape. This cut the range roughly in half, and when given a spherical plot on a map of the galaxy for each of the squadron's sightings, the spheres intersected in a relatively small area of space. 500 known systems existed in that overlapping slice of space. Kirtan discarded all truly loyal worlds from the list. He also removed the openly rebellious worlds, because intelligence had enough spies of their own in hotbeds of rebel support to inform him if Rogue Squadron had been seen. While the Alliance was willing to draw volunteers and support from such worlds, they chose not to jeopardize them by basing operations on them. Inhospitable worlds were shuffled onto a secondary list. While the base on Hoth had shown the rebels were willing to hide almost anywhere, post-invasion breakdowns and evaluations of the Hoth operation showed the rebels had trouble modifying equipment to work there. In fact, had the rebels not been reeling from their defeat at Dera IV, they probably would have bypassed Hoth altogether. Being the opportunists they were, the rebels did tend to prefer worlds that already had structures on them that could be converted into installations. It appeared that the more benign and abandoned the world seemed, the more likely the rebellion was to choose it as a base. Kirtan doubted the rebels themselves realized they had this predilection for taking over ruins for their own use, and he imagined it had to do with a subconscious desire to renew the old Republic. The very thing that drove them against the Empire demanded they embrace things older than the Empire to give their movement a legitimacy it lacked itself. The final list of primary worlds contained only 10 names on it. Kirtan subjected this list to the final selection process, one that had come to him as inspiration upon waking from a dream that included visions of Isan Izard metamorphosing into a scarlet ghost of Darth Vader. The X-Wings, in arriving at Chorax, had not expected to be dragged out of hyperspace. That meant their entry vector, if drawn as a line through space, would point out their intended destination. Kirtan plotted that line through his data model, and then asked the computer to sort the candidate worlds according to their proximity to any world on that line. One world had a perfect correlation with that line. Kirtan smiled. Talassia, in the Merobe system. He downloaded his result into his personal datapad and headed off for Admiral Devlia's office. We know where you are, Rogue Squadron. Now, we will crush you. 18. Corin's eyes snapped open. He knew from the chill of the air and the deep darkness that it was still night. The fog drifting in through the window of the small cottage seemed to amplify the silence of the night. He knew that nothing, not light nor sound, had awakened him. But he also knew something was wrong. He glanced over at Oral's cot and saw it was empty. That wasn't much of a surprise. He'd learned that Gans needed only a fraction of the sleep humans did, and appeared to be able to store it up for times when they could not sleep. He would have loved to know what set of evolutionary pressures had given the Gans this ability, but Oral remained decidedly private concerning his species, and Corin hadn't pressed for details. Corin's sense of unease didn't center itself on Oral. It remained a feeling that something was wrong. And this sensation was one with which Corin had a lot of experience. He'd felt it when preparing for meetings with criminals, or during undercover work, when his cover had been blown and enemies were waiting to hurt him. His father had nodded sagely when Corin told him about that feeling, and had encouraged him to heed it when it occurred. He threw open his sleeping bag and shivered as the cold air hit his naked flesh. Well, father, I'll go with my gut. Corin pulled on his flight suit and discovered that its synthetic material retained the night's chill better than his flesh retained heat. He stepped into boots that were also rather frigid. He would have run in place for a moment to warm himself up, but a wave of malignancy washed over him. Corin crossed to the cottage's open doorway and crouched in the shadows. He'd have given his right arm for a blaster, but he stored his personal sidearm in Talassia's flight center, along with his helmet, gloves, and other equipment. In my days with Forsec, I wouldn't have been caught dead without a gun of some sort. I don't even have a vibroblade. Either I'm going to be very lucky here, or very dead. Any advantage he might have came from the basic appearance of the cottage itself. With an open doorway, unglazed windows, and sagging roof, the cottage hardly looked like the sort of place anyone, let alone pilots, would choose to live in. Unfortunately, Oral and Corin had no choice, since a windstorm had knocked a local kaha tree through the wall of their room in the pilot's wing of the flight center. Unpowered, and barely visible from the center of the compound, the cottage might go unnoticed. Unless someone is being very thorough. The unmistakable squish of mud beneath boot alerted Corin to the presence of someone just outside the cottage. Looking up, he saw the snout of a blaster carbine poke through the doorway. A left leg encased in the slate-gray armor worn by stormtroopers on commando missions followed it. The gun's muzzle moved to the right, away from Corin, and began a slow sweep of the room. Corin exploded up from his crouch and slammed his left fist into the stormtrooper's throat. Using his own body as a weapon, the Corellian smashed the stormtrooper against the door jamb. Hooking his right hand through the armpit of the soldier's armor, Corin spun and flung the man into the center of the cottage. Taking one step forward, Corin leaped up and landed with both knees on the Imperial stomach. The stormtrooper retched, and vomit squirted from beneath his helmet. Corin pulled the man's blaster pistol from his holster, tucked it up beneath the trooper's chin, and pulled the trigger once. A muffled squeak, accompanied by the reddish light flashing through the helmet's goggle eyes. Then the body beneath him went limp. Corin winced. He who carries a blaster set on kill dies by a blaster set on kill. He tossed the blaster pistol to the floor beside the carbine, then slid off the dead man's abdomen. He unbuckled the dead trooper's ammo belt, tugging it free of the body. He noticed, in addition to the erg clips for the blasters, a number of pouches, half of which were bulging. Opening one of them, he saw compact silver cylinders. And a new shiver ran through him.